We've had this classical conversation on the books with composer, producer, and artist Stefan Emmer, who's joining me now for the details on his album Mount Mundane. In a nutshell, we're talking about 15 adagios for piano, orchestra, and choir, recorded at Abbey Road Studios in London. Welcome, Stefan. Thanks for making the time.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
I hear Abbey Road Studios, and immediately I'm thinking, oh yeah, the Beatles. Is this the same studio that we're talking about?
In fact, the very same room, because Abbey Road in London, England, they have three studios, but the legendary one is studio number two, which is where we did our orchestral recording. Normally, it's more for rock groups and there's probably six people in the room, but with us, that was more like 60.
Wow, that is just so neat. So, having never been there myself, tell us a little bit about the space and how you set it up, equipped it to achieve the kind of sound that you were looking for Mount Mundane.
I'd be happy to. We decided to not only deliver later on a stereo version, but also a Dolby Atmos version, meaning like in the cinema that it's all around you. And often these last type of production styles are being done only in post-production, so afterwards. But we decided to actually record it in and not only remix it afterwards, but during the recording, we also had microphones standing in unorthodox places all over the room to get it from the source, the spatial qualities of how instruments sound in the room. The room itself, if you touch one of the walls, there is a slight chance that the paint comes off, so old and historical it is. But as in English, the wording goes, never change a winning team, so should you never change your walls, because the acoustic there, I have to say, is one of the very finest of recording rooms in the world.
Now that you've set the stage for us, what kind of musical journey unfolds from there?
Well, it is a concept album, and a concept album is something, a format that I borrowed from the world of pop music, where in the mid-70s, you suddenly had these progressive rock bands wanting to have a specific subject to be the central theme of the music, and then have all kinds of interrelational stuff going on between the separate pieces of the general composition, not unlike in classical music, but slightly different, except in my case, I borrowed that from the world of yesteryear in pop, and I thought that'd be an interesting format. What can we do with classical music so that it actually is not only art for art's sake, autonomous music, but also has something to tell? So the journey I wanted to tell is that we all have a personal journey through life, and we have our ups, we have our downs, we have our limitations, we have problems, we have issues. And I wanted to portray my personal story, which is that I had suffered a difficulty with my hearing, which I overcame not by accepting that I couldn't do much more anymore, but in fact, soundtracking the problem with this music. And hopefully the listener will see it as a musical message of hope.
At what point in your life did you start experiencing difficulty with your hearing?
Oh, that was very peculiar, because that's about 30 years ago, except I didn't have any problem with it. It slept. It sort of didn't come to surface. I remember with one performance in the north of England, that I heard a terrible noise coming through a speaker system, which gave a huge impact in my left ear, except that I didn't get any problems of it, and I could perform that night, and I could for the next 20 years after it happened. And then suddenly one day, just when I woke up in bed, I couldn't hear that well anymore with my left ear. And I had it checked, and it was drastically diminished, 50%, 50%. And on top of that, I also heard the ringing tone, which we call tinnitus in medical terms. And that's when it started to be a problem. And for a while, I couldn't really make any music, or enjoy music by listening to others, because it just reminded me of that asymmetrical listening experience, which doesn't give you joy, but it actually makes you more aware of your problem. So I couldn't listen before I dreamt of a solution, which was quite a practical one. Why think in stereo? Let's take one speaker like we used to do in the 50s, mono, back to mono, Phil Spector said before he pulled his guns. And then what we did was listen to music that doesn't necessarily come to your ears, to your hearing, from a separated left and right, but just from one source. And that's how I got back into music listening. And then I thought the next step is let's get back to music creation. And that's where this project started.
Did you find a particular type of music to be more aggravating for the tinnitus, or was it more of the surround sound effect that was irritating?
It's a combination of sorts, really. It's a bit of everything. But the main thing is that I cannot really relate to loud music anymore, also not to aggressive music. And regardless of the genre, I mean, Wagner, unfortunately, no, thank you. It's too loud, it's too aggressive, it's too much information as well, musically. So I prefer to be more minimal, more mild, slow, because the pieces on this album are all deliberately, let's say, pocket symphonies on their own, but only in the adagio tempo. Because I find personal expression from any composer in classical music is always, as a listener, personally, I find best to hear and experience in the adagio. The adagio is the most personal expression of a composer I discovered. And I thought that's the format for me because I want to express this message really well, which we just talked about.
What are some of the personal aspects that you convey across the course of the 15-piece collection?
Well, that ugliness, either in a painting or in a real life situation or in music, or indeed with a medical issue, as I had, you can do two things with that. You can convert it into something of beauty, which I try to do by making music out of misery, or you can grow into passive acceptance of your personal situation and say, well, this world is not for me. I'll read the paper. I will never make music again. And you start to complain and be victimizing yourself, so to speak. And I decided against the latter. And I wanted to see if out of that misery, I could create something of beauty, supposed beauty, I should say. That's up to the listener, namely. But I did find, Marie-Claire, that whilst going to see how that should be achieved, I actually was inspired in a deeper way than normally when all is well. And that's, of course, the old romantic notion of the artist should suffer and all of that. But I do think that if you do some more introspection out of, I dare say, in honesty, the Dutch are very frank, out of despair, I thought I got deeper into what I wanted to, and more urgency in that I really seriously wanted to get some message across musically. And that brought to me a whole new layer of inspiration. And certainly, because of that, I heard harmonies whilst playing the piano, which I couldn't get hold of before. So it enriched my awareness on how inspiration works.
Let's talk some more about this imagery of the mountain. Is Mount Mundane an actual place you could point to on the map, or is this more of a metaphorical mountain?
It's a metaphorical mountain, and the alliteration was also, language-wise, I thought was really nice. It's not my native language, as you can hear, but I thought, does it exist? So I went off to you know who online to ask, does it exist? And it didn't. There was obviously the Everest and the whatever else, the Mont Blanc in Europe. But I thought the metaphor, mundane, you see, is try and leave the ordinary behind you. Don't talk about gossiping or about your neighbors or about the importance of your bucket list or all of that. So I thought, let's metaphorically try and portray an imaginary world where you leave that behind you and you get to be, if you do so, you develop yourself a bit more. It's a bit pretentious, but then in the end, you'll find a very Shangri-La type of place where life is a bit more in harmony.
I'm curious about your choice of instrumentation with the inclusion of choir, and it seems like was that more of a timbral choice?
Yes, timbral, and also what I also like of voices, using voices is more as an instrument. So it's not with lyrics, it's not with words, it's wordless vocals, sometimes in unison with the woodwinds or the strings, etc. And I thought, let's do that to also get even more of the emotional content across. But not as a lead vocal or as a leading soloist, but more, in a way, imaging the collectiveness of human instruments. I thought that was a good reasoning.
Since we are talking about this as a concept album, the album cover image played into your vision of the journey as well. And it's artwork by Rei Morimura. How does that artwork support your vision?
Very much so, because I saw it halfway through the creative process. Not that I didn't know of the artist, I did know the artist as a fan. It's an interesting artist, Rei Morimura. He is a Japanese artiste. However, surely he couldn't be called by his parents over there in Japan Rei. But that had a reason. That is because he was inspired by American cartoons and graphics novels and stories. So I thought it was really interesting bridging that gap between West and East. And the actual illustration is a field where you stand in imaginarily, and then you see the mountain, and right behind the mountain, there's the horizon where you probably will find something better than in your daily life. And so we had to to ask permission to this artist, and he wanted to know what kind of music. We were the first to ask, could we use this as our cover art for music? And he granted that after he heard the music. So that was also like going to Abbey Road, a mini a closet boyhood dream come true.
One more thing I for sure want to mention, Mount Mundane is out on Electric Fairy Tale Records. Can you tell me more about the label? I understand you're the founder.
Yes, the Electric Fairy Tale label is independent, but also with a mission statement, and that is, we believe there's only we is only a couple of people. It's very small, but internationally, so that every piece of music that should be released on it should innovate in certain aspects, try to add something new to the bill, and not to produce more of the same and recreate or recycle or all of that. At the same time, as far as I'm concerned, that's also my own vision, is that a composer should not restrict him or herself to any given genre. The music industry usually says at this moment that they feel that it should be more of the same when someone is successful. So if string quartets are very popular, let's do more string quartets out on the market. Whereas I say that never should prevail before artistic adventure. It's a bit idealistic, but I think that we operate that way, and genre might become something of the past, because people now also combine, say, contemporary classical music with, say, ethnical world music. Very interesting persons do that at the moment, who actually are being trained to become a classical composer. In the 50s, you used to have a combination of two idioms, classical compositional techniques combined with complex jazz harmonies. And they called that at the time, in the 1950s, third stream. So there are all kinds of hybrid genres which are being neglected usually by the big music industry. And I feel that the future actually lies exactly there, because younger people are not particularly attached to any genre. They just look if they like the piece. And that was another reason for the Mount Mundane format, the concept album. Yes, classical music, but restricted to a 3-minute duration, whatever the structure is. Because I feel that in classical music, the amount of concentration you as creators ask from the listener, new listeners, untrained listeners, is a bit much to ask them to be concentrated for 45 minutes. So the shorter time duration, I feel, has a future to actually help promote the beauty of classical music.
In the vein of genre bending and how we might see that in Mount Mundane, you talked about some of the popular influences and some of the classical structures, as well as if you could touch on some of the French Impressionism that came into play across the composition process.
Yes, well, today we have new classical music by composers who are mainly inspired by American minimal music. So the music of Steve Reich, Philip Glass, and all of that. I thought, yeah, it's interesting, but harmonically, it's not as rich as some of the older music is. So I really started a forensic adventure by really investigating where are those more interesting harmonic developments within the music coming from. And obviously, in the French music, I could hear more and more that there was, in fact, more harmonic adventure in it than, and less repetition than in minimal music, which I thought, yes, that'd be interesting to see if we could innovate on that. Also, to distinguish yourself, of course, but I do feel like, if you come to think of it, the Impressionist music of France, mainly 100 years ago, actually is the blueprint for film music today. And I like the cinematic qualities of music as long as it's autonomous. I don't particularly like the idea of film music having to only serve someone else's script. I believe interesting music should be interesting on its own without imagery, and should trigger imagery throughout its own composition.
Has this kind of deep dive into these lush harmonies, would you say that's a different approach than what you've taken in the past to composition?
Yeah, absolutely. I do believe that this is where two things came together. It's a good question that I'm glad you asked, because on the one hand, as I said earlier on, I think I was inclined to go in a deeper introspection. What is it you want to say, and what is your deepest emotional inclination for that? And that's how I received some deeper inspiration, where I could reach more out to more complex harmonies than I ever did before. And at the same time, that was also being stimulated by taking my reference from the Impressionist classical music, where that all already happened. I'll tell you one other person who I think should be mentioned there. I'm a great, great admirer, and I hope your listeners will one day listen to that as well, is the music of a very young French composer who is called Lili Boulanger. Lily Boulanger is the sister of Nadia Boulanger, who is supposed to be the best classical music teacher ever in the world. And she had pupils like Philip Glass, like Leonard Bernstein, and so many more. But her sister, younger sister, was already winning the Prix de Rome, which was the highest prize you could win over in Europe for classical music at that time. And she was, I think, 23 or 24, the youngest female composer ever to win that. Unfortunately, she was ill and she passed away in her 20s. But I think she was the one composer after the well-known impressionist composers, Ravel, Debussy, etc. But 15 years later, you had this wonderful composer called Lily Boulanger, who I thought, that's amazing what she does in the palette. If we're all painters for a moment, and her palette is like Picasso, it's Matisse, fantastic. So I'm next to a maker, I'm also a real passionate fanboy.
Well, thank you for giving us such a wonderful foundation for listening to Mount Mundane. Is there anything else that you wanted to share or add?
Well, that I hope that classical music, it has a future. If you innovate, also that's a new message of hope I feel I should be telling to who is interested, that you shouldn't be afraid as a composer for AI as long as you innovate, because creating more of the same will be done by AI in 5 years' time. So we have another incentive now to stay original.
Once again, that's Stefan Emmer on his album Mount Mundane, a 15-piece collection of adagios for piano, orchestra, and choir. It's been really great to have you on the program. Thank you so much, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Maria Claire.